Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
It's time for Dirt and Sprague.
You're talking to the Rolex-wearing, diamond ring-wearing, gift-stealing, woo!
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Wheeling-dealing, limousine-wrecked, jet-flying, son of a gun.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
And I'm having a hard time holding these alligators down. Woo!
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Second hour, Dirt and Sprague with you here on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan, also the home of the Oregon Ducks. And we're going to pivot now to college football. Big Ten, Pac-12, deciding not to try to risk it during COVID. We've got three of the Power Five that are moving forward, some kicking around the idea of having fans in attendance. There's some sketchy things going on at different institutions, so we can talk about that as well. But Bruce Feldman wrote about the medical information that led the Pac-12 to ultimately rule on not playing during this and maybe getting to spring football, late winter, whatever it ends up being. You can find that on Twitter. We just tweeted it out. Bruce Feldman is on Twitter at Bruce Feldman CFB, and he's on The Athletic and Fox Sports as well. Bruce, thank you for hopping on with us here in Portland, man. We always appreciate the time. What have you made of the last week and a half of college football and just where this thing has gone?
Right. It's been a roller coaster, guys. Now, obviously, with the news of both the Pac-12 and the Big Ten saying they're not playing in the fall, the story I did on The Athletic yesterday that went up, I had talked to a bunch of not just medical experts and also some ADs, but pretty much half the coaches in the conference. And the thing to me that really hit home was when you start hearing football coaches sound like they are scared because of the information that the medical experts presented to them, mm-hmm. I thought it was pretty eye-opening. And look, there was more than one element of this. A big piece of it certainly was the concerns about heart issues and myocarditis, but there's also the element, I think this gets glossed over maybe in some of the Twitter chatter, what we had reported is that there were numerous hotspots identified in the Pac-12 at schools where the medical experts said they would have had to ramp up testing to almost daily levels at, I think it's five of these schools. And the reality that they had assessed is they wouldn't be able to actually have gotten that capacity till November. And then you start getting into the issues of whether it was the right thing to take those resources maybe away when you're from someplace else to direct it all to a college football program to make something work. So there was that element. And I think, the part of my story that we did, there was a line in there where you hear from Bob Bowlsby, the commissioner of the Big 12, just talking about why they're pressing forward. And one of the coaches in the Pac-12 said to me, goes, they're not clearly getting the information we got, mm-hmm. and they did not hear what we heard, and or they don't want to know. And that's the thing that I think was particularly damning in that regard. And so, you know, look, right now, I think the part that I think is a curious thing to me is how much sharing of information is going on around the college football world between these medical experts, because it didn't seem like there was a lot between the Big Ten and the Pac-12, or certainly between those two conferences and the ACC and the SEC and the Big 12. And so I think that's the part where you're scratching your head going, look, you guys have gathered some data now because you've all had college football players come back and do your own protocols and procedures. Mm-hmm. You would hope that that would give them a little more information to make more informed decisions. But I was told it wasn't like there's some kind of registry where they're keeping all this data that they're finding. And to me, that was kind of a head scratcher in all this.
It's another question of where is the NCAA at in that? That would be nice of them to put together for all the conferences to use. I love the piece, Bruce, just because I think a lot of people were frustrated and wondering, what you know, we just want answers. Why is there not going to be football? And it was a really detailed explanation of what was presented to the coaches, the medical information. And for anybody who hasn't read it, I would suggest to do so. But to your point on the different science and different conferences, I think it almost sums up kind of where we're at as a country right now. But will we get to the point where the other conferences have to, not have to, but feel the pressure, I guess, to publicly release, here's what we're finding? Because I've seen like some parents in the Big Ten are writing letters and they want their kids to play, but Kevin Warren hasn't really released that information. We don't know quite what the Big 12, ACC, and SEC are seeing. Are we going to get to that point where we're going to get to know the science from every conference and why they're making the decision they're making?
I hope so. I think we'll get a little closer because I do think there's some pressure on the SEC, especially to be a little more transparent. Because on one hand, the Big Ten schools, most of them have at least put out, okay, here's how many players got tested. Here's how many were positive. Here's how many are asymptomatic. Now, no one has said we had a couple of players who have had to be hospitalized or, you know, there's some of that information has gotten out anecdotally because either players or their parents have taken to social media to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And for HIPAA concerns and some issues of privacy, I think there's one thing to say, hey, we're not going to mention specific players in this. But as it relates to the SEC not even disclosing any of the information, I think that has added to the concern. So I think that part of it may get a little closer, but to be perfectly honest, I thought, and the day of the announcement, I was on Big Ten Network, not probably a half hour after the commissioner, Kevin Warren, was on there. And Dave Revson, the host of BTN, really pressed him on some issues about specific issues of why they arrived at the decision they did. Not only that, he talked about myocarditis, and Kevin Warren did not go anywhere near any specifics. And this is when he has the whole sports world at least focused on the Big Ten news at that point. That would have been, to me, a really good opportunity to explain what is going on and why you made the decision. And he steered clear of it, and he went out of his way seemingly to steer clear of it, which to me, I thought was a very questionable at best decision, especially considering like we at The Athletic probably an hour later got information from a high-ranking Big Ten source saying that at least 10 players in the Big Ten they are suspected to be suffering from myocarditis. To me, if you're Kevin Warren, it probably behooves you to put out some of that information to explain this is why we did what we did, and they chose not to. So right now, I think we're in just a like. It's a weird place, as you guys said. It's a kind of a microcosm of a bigger issue right now, and you just keep your fingers crossed that things will ease up and get better.
This is national college football writer Bruce Feldman of The Athletic, Fox Sports as well, and the Audible podcast with him and Stuart Mandel on Twitter at Bruce Feldman CFB. Going through the piece, you know, what came through my mind, Bruce, was it's great to read about the Pac-12 and what coaches and ADs were saying, whether they put their name on it or not, because I think sharing the information is vital. And kind of to piggyback off my co-host's last question, doesn't it benefit every conference if they work together to be on the same page in this instance? Why did that not happen? Why do we have three separating from two? Did something lead to this, or is this the kind of way it's always been where conferences run on their own timeline, their own decisions, and the other four can be damned? It just doesn't seem like it was very smart to kind of separate the Power Five the way they did. Why did they not come together on that?
It's a good question. I think some of it has to do with the nature of college football has always been very regionalized. And I think what has further driven it is, look, we're dealing with a pandemic, and this has gotten certain states have been dealing with different issues than maybe other parts of the country haven't. This thing has gotten way crazy politicized, and that hasn't made it any easier. And I think there's an element which you guys alluded to a little bit ago, is the NCAA has completely been asleep at the wheel with this, right? I mean, there's been absolutely no leadership on this front, and that has only made it worse. So it's kind of the worst kind of case scenario is this, is all those factors kind of come together in a pandemic, which, by the way, is different than, you know, it's not like your weatherman or your weather person predicts you're going to have a tornado tomorrow. Whatever one of the three of us do, whether, you know, it doesn't impact whether it happens or not. It's going to happen.
Right.
Right. Well, this is a pandemic and it's a virus. You know, human behavior does factor into that. So I just think it's like all these, you know, bad factors have kind of gotten twisted together, and this is kind of where we're at. And it's just unfortunate, right? Because we're seeing just as it relates to certainly college athletics, we're seeing a huge void in leadership.
Should we be worried about the future of the collective Power Five during this? Or do you think whatever ends up happening, they're still going to kind of come together by next year or the year after and kind of be normalized again?
I'd like to think that. You know, it's hard to say, just because, you know, you see stuff like Nebraska really just kind of popping off to a large degree and trying to buck the system within the Big Ten. And you're like, man, how is that going to ease back into the fold 6 months ago? Well, people forget about that. And, you know, it's like you say things in the heat of the moment, and are those things forgotten easily? Right. It just feels like these conferences are so out for their own best interest, which I kind of understand. But it's like, you know, all this talk about how college football needs a commissioner, and I don't disagree with it. But good luck getting like Greg Sankey and the SEC to go, yeah, we're going to go along with that. They never wanted to have the same number of games conference wise as everybody else who's trying to make the playoff. So why are they going to do something that is probably, I guess, against what they think is in their best interest? Why is the Big Ten going to do it, right? I mean, they're all kind of just independent contractors who are more comfortable operating in that way than anything else. And so it just shows like how fragmented everything is in the sport right now.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Of the three conferences that are carrying on, there were two troubling stories yesterday. And that there might have been more. I just didn't see all the headlines. But the Florida State one opened some eyes, I think, from some people with players taking to social media to voice their concerns about what was happening. And then the Syracuse story, where I think it was reported today that a chunk of the team might end up opting out because of the way things are being handled. Just what have you made of those? And then how many more Syracuse and Florida States are there out there that we just don't know about yet?
Yeah, you worry about them potentially flaring up in other places like that. I mean, I think in this day and age when the different story, I think, with Florida State is that it is at first a more of a social media story right now, because you have players taking to social media and they are on the radar at this point, because there's already been some blowback from probably, I don't know, 2 months ago. It's hard to keep track in the pandemic of the timeline with their best player, Marvin Wilson, and new coach Mike Norvell.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
this certainly hasn't helped. And then the Syracuse one, I think that one is, you know, you've heard all kinds of rumblings. They're similar in nature. I just think the Syracuse one is to this point has been a little more under the radar, because there hasn't been as much of the social media flash. And also, quite honestly, because Syracuse isn't the football brand that FSU is. But neither one is a good situation for the ACC. And I don't, you know, I've heard the Syracuse one could get a little worse, or could get more visible, at least in regards to that. So it's not a not an ideal situation for the AD there, John Wildhack, or certainly Dino Babers, because I don't know how you get in front of how much you can get out in front of a story like that that seems to be, you know, more than just bubbling up, especially in this climate we're in now.
Bruce, did they blow it not taking those months more seriously and maybe getting to a point where collectively they work on a late winter, like a January type start, where it allow them to get more testing in house for each school, and then by January you try to do what you can, or is this just kind of what to expect given the global pandemic?
Probably the latter. I mean, like, I don't think it's how realistic it would have been to try to have a bubble for college sports, especially related to football. this is a microcosm of something bigger. I mean, clearly we have had huge issues trying to wrangle this pandemic. And like I said, it's not surprising that college football would be struggling with it. I mean, you look at a handful of schools. I mean, Boston College has had a ton of tests. They've had one positive. Notre Dame has had really minimal. I know the University of Washington hasn't had it. Like, there's a bunch of schools. I don't want to say there's a bunch of schools that are doing it right and a bunch of schools that are doing it wrong, but there are plenty of examples within college football around the country of places that seem to have been very proactive. Their student athletes have taken it extremely seriously, their staff, and they're also well-resourced, right? So I think there have been a bunch of those. I think the harder part is, and this speaks to a bigger issue, when I talk to some people who are optimistic in the SEC and talk to some trainers who are in the middle of this, and they talk to some of their peers, they feel optimistic how their teams have handled it now, and they feel like they have a better handle on it, and they feel like the players are taking it more seriously now, like they should. The thing that worries them the most is what happens when the regular students come back. And that's about to happen. And in some cases, it's starting to happen. And how do you control that? Like, one of the things that has come up a lot this week has been, well, these two conferences decided they're not going to play college football, but what about having regular students there? That's like hypocritical. And, you know, when I talk to the medical experts in the Pac-12, even some of the coaches, the distinction here is that the regular students are expected to social distance and wear masks. They're not playing tackle football. They're not doing 9-on-7 drill. They're not supposed to be gathering in groups of 100 and tackling each other and breathing on each other and sweating on each other. And so that's the part where they were saying, look, we have a better chance of containing this when we're working out in small groups and everybody is taking the precautions. It's harder to take those precautions doing football stuff. And I think the issue connected to that is, if there is more spread on campuses because there's more cases out there, it's harder to keep it out of your building. And once it gets in your building with a couple of people and they're all together, that's when it's, you know, you're fighting a real big uphill battle.
Right. Jimmy Lake with some pretty strong comments today, saying he thinks the other conferences eventually follow suit with what the Pac-12 and Big Ten have already decided. Do you agree with that?
I don't even know if I answered if you heard your question or not.
Oh, just because Jimmy Lake said he thinks that eventually all the Power Five conferences will shut down like the Pac-12 and the Big Ten already have. So just in your gut, do you think we're heading in that direction with the Big 12, the ACC and the SEC?
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, like, at this point, it's hard to say what they're going to decide, because they do have their own medical experts, right? And, you know, clearly their medical experts are interpreting the information differently, or they have chosen to make a very different risk calculation, right? And so, whereas one of the coaches in the Pac-12 told me for that story, you know what, some of my peers at other places are saying, you know what, we can test for the heart issues. And this coach said, you can test for it. He goes, but you're just going to sit the guy out. You're going to hope he's going to be okay for the rest of his life. My concern is, we don't want him to get the heart issue in the first place. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's almost that perspective that is the part that's different. And so hopefully there will be no issues. And then maybe the concern here will be managed a little better, and it won't be as dire as some of the things that the Pac-12 and the Big Ten fear are happening. I think what circles back in the Pac-12, I can speak to, is, hey, we thought we knew a little more about this virus than we actually did. And I think some of the stuff where it was like, wait a minute, some of the things we may have assumed about the virus a month or so ago, those things we're finding out probably aren't as true as we thought, or we're not convinced of it. And I think that lack of clarity is one of the things that really scares them. And I guess in some of those other places, They're not as fearful of it.
Yeah. Great stuff, man. Bruce Feldman, Fox Sports, the Audible podcast with Stuart Mandel and The Athletic. He's got a great piece out about the Pac-12 reaching their conclusion and how they got there. Bruce, you've been on top of it, man. Thank you for stopping in and talking to us for almost 20 minutes. It was very informative, and we really appreciate the time, my man.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys.
All right, there we go. Great stuff from Bruce Feldman. A lot to unfold there. Let's just do it. We'll get to that next. We'll talk. What did you think of Bruce Feldman just had to say diving into the college football world? We'll get to that next on The Fan. All right, welcome back in. Went a little long there with Bruce Feldman, but we don't get him on often, so we had to talk college football. Really good stuff from him. If you missed that interview, I'm sorry. We're never going to allow anybody to hear it again. No, we'll
that
podcast.
That one's just for us.
We'll podcast it. We'll put it up at 1080thefan.com. Les Schwab Tires podcast.
Boom goes the dynamite.
What did you make of what he said? What I mean, I felt like there was four or five big, just juicy pieces to that, what he was saying. Yeah. What stuck out for you?
I continue to find it fascinating how different every conference is handling this. And I do want to give a tip to the cap to the Pac-12. I know people aren't happy about the decision and we all wanted to watch college football this fall. But the way that they released the medical information paired with the column that Bruce wrote, and again, if you're pissed about the season getting canceled, I would highly suggest you going and reading that. I feel like they've been pretty honest and upfront about why they made that decision, and I'm going to give them a lot of credit for being unified in their messaging, that every single coach seems to be on board with this. As Feldman mentioned, he talked to almost every coach in the conference. They were all on board with the decision. They understand why the conference did what they did. And you view that against what the Big Ten has done, and Kevin Warren not giving any details medically about why they shut down. There's one team, is it Maryland? There's some random team in the Big Ten where like a bunch of parents have written a letter to the university saying, demanding that their kids can play football.
Oh, God.
The Nebraska
go to a JC.
Story.
Shut
right,
up.
You had the coaches releasing letters, and I get it. Everybody wanted to play this year, but they just seem very splintered from this, where the Pac-12, I think, seems to be doing pretty good in their being unified. But I think that the two biggest stories are the Syracuse and Florida State stories and where those are going to go, about guys refusing to go to practice, potentially opting out for the upcoming season. There's one kind of boiling under the radar at Pitt as well, where they had a bunch of guys that showed symptoms all of a sudden for COVID, so they've had to cancel practice now the last 2 days. Those are the headlines that I'm going to keep an eye on going forward.
I think that's a valid point. The complaints... Parents want their kids to play. I get that. I'm a parent of two kids. I understand. It's been made. The decision's done. Like, these people that are still bitching about this, you got to let it go, man, because your one letter of concern, Karen, is not going to dictate Kevin Warren changing his mind on this. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this question, though. He said he talked, all the coaches he talked with within this conference for that piece, all of them, sounded scared mm-hmm. of what the future could be for young athletes if they are to suffer from myocarditis.
Yeah.
Clearly the Big Ten is dealing with this, right? The reports came out from both websites that 9 to 10 players got myocarditis. I think that's part of the reason Kevin Warren's so vague on it. He doesn't want to openly discuss that these kids have heart conditions.
That could be it.
That
maybe.
Might cost years of their life.
Yeah, maybe.
Why do these other coaches in these other conferences not feel that way? Right? Like, don't tell me it's competitive and it's the region. Mario Cristobal wants to punch every single coach in the face and win a national championship. That dude is as intense and competitive as any coach in the country. Any. Mm-hmm. I'm going to assume he was part of that conversation, whether on the record or off the record. And he's come out and his comments have been great. Yeah. Hey, if we really care about student athletes, that comes first, not football. And I just find it very interesting. One conference seems like they made this assessment and judgment because they actually had some bad conditions go on. And the Pac-12 got wind of this and were told at a presentation, this could happen to you. And everybody cared. Whereas the other three conferences, you can't tell me they haven't been told about myocarditis or any other function of right. COVID for young players
right.
and young athletes. And yet largely all of them are just in this no big deal. Let's go play football.
Yeah.
I find that it's not just a region thing. There's something to that. Why is our conference care and these other conferences largely don't?
Yeah. The region thing I laugh at as well, because the Big Ten is as passionate a football region as there is. And they made the same decision as the Pac-12. So let's not act like the Big Ten areas, Nebraska, Michigan, Ohio, don't care about football. That's just ridiculous. I thought the point Bruce made is a great one about, you know, the Pac-12 is concerned about the players getting the heart condition. Other conferences are worried about, do we have the testing capacity to see if they have it?
What do you say, mid-November for everyday testing?
And that's how long it'll take. And you look at what's happening in Arizona, LA, certain areas like that where they don't have the daily testing that you need. And for those who haven't followed, those are the big issues right now that are popping up at different schools. Like the Florida State players saw their athletic director go on a panel thing with the governor of Florida and saying, oh, we're testing these guys all the time. Everybody's fine. And the Florida State players get wind of that. They're like, what? We're getting tested like once a week at most. And then they had a player this week that practiced for 2 days after already getting tested and then all of a sudden was sick and now has to quarantine. Damn. So they practiced with him for 2 days. And they're like, sweet. This is – that was their whole – so they're threatening to boycott. And the same thing has happened in Syracuse where they showed up and they thought, all right, we're going to be, you know, dialed in with all our protocols. And they're testing once a week at most at Syracuse. And the players got wind of that and they just said, huh? Like, we're not – what? We're not doing this a little more often? So that's my concern. I thought Jimmy Lake had some pretty strong comments today where he was asked, you know, what, you know, are you worried about getting left behind? And you only the Pac-12 and the Big Ten getting canceled so far. And he basically said, don't worry, the other three will be following suit sooner rather than later. And who knows, maybe he's right, maybe he's wrong. But when I get wind of stories like that, yeah. I think the last thing that Bruce said that was dialed in, and this has happened in Major League Baseball as well, I think you're going to see it in the NFL. Some teams are going to handle it great and some teams aren't. And I think that's the big concern. And this has always been the issue with college football. This isn't one league. You know what I mean? Like this, every institution can handle it however they want to handle it. Florida State can test once a week if they want. The Pac-12 wanted to test guys every day. NFL teams are testing guys every day. So some universities might think this is ridiculous. We were fine. We were testing our guys. Our players were healthy. We were treating them the right way. That's one member of a 14-member conference. And you're going to start to see, I think, some programs going, you know, dropping like flies.
It's just, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's protecting the almighty dollar. It just does not seem feasible that three conferences are going to play. And again, if we get it, I'm going to be happy. I'll have football to watch, right?
I'll watch it on Saturday.
I'm not a parent of any of those kids. I'm not the kid playing, and I'm not the coach responsible for said kids. So I'm kind of out of that, right?
You can't sue me for watching.
You can't sue me for partaking in that entertainment. I do find that the biggest of what is that two conferences have concluded the medical information is enough to just simply say, let's try to play late winter. If that doesn't happen, we're going to have to bite a financial bullet. Whereas three are acting as if it's almost there's nothing going on. Like they know there's COVID, but they're talking about fans in attendance. They're talking about how everything's going to be okay. Dabo, oh, we're going to have a national champion. Really? Are we ignoring the information or are you getting different information? Because if you're getting different information, I'd like to hear it.
Yeah.
And then make my own decision, right? I think we all are reading different things and a lot of us are reading the same things and some of us have the same opinion and a lot of us don't. And that's okay. I think that's the part of the global pandemic that's important to remember. There's really not, you can be a little different from somebody else in the feelings on some of this stuff, but
Show us the math is what I want to know.
Yeah, show me.
If you're making a decision,
show me your
why.
Evidence, right? And if Bruce's report right there was accurate in our interview with him, that they think it's going to take till about mid-November for every school to do daily testing?
That's why you back out.
That's not feasible. Yep. There's no way that's feasible. All right, we got a lot more to get to in the next hour and a half. Don't forget, we got Sprague in the line exactly an hour from now. And in 30 minutes, Anthony Newman, we can pick his brain on what he thinks of all of this. He did play in high school, college, and the NFL. So we can touch on all those things. Anthony Newman at the top of the 2 o'clock hour. We're back with more. But
hey, did the NBA find something that they should stick with? We'll get to that coming up 10 minutes from now. Anthony Newman will join us at the top of the hour. Get your fake sponsors in, 503-250-1080. We'll spread the line at 2:30. Got a lot to gamble on this weekend.
I won't derail the segment. I'll just say this remark. Job well done. They could have not nailed... they couldn't have nailed the bubble return any better. The NBA hit an absolute grand slam.
Which has people speculating, which is what we'll get to in the next segment, because I do find it interesting what they'll do moving forward. If Sprague ever gets close to beating me in golf, and it's coming down to like the 17th hole, 18th hole.
Boy, I appreciate this hypothetical, because that's not remotely close to ever happening.
I have found the rule that I'm going to use it against you, and it is 12.2B in the USGA rulebook.
I'm very familiar with
you have to be, right?
The B.
The B rules, right? The 12.2Bs, right? Because I'm going to look over, and if you touch some sand, man, I'm... Hey, that's a stroke! That's a stroke penalty over there! I don't know how many people saw this. This is pretty crazy. So the U.S. Amateur is happening at Bandon Dunes this weekend.
That's an underrated, awesome situation for us, by the way.
Dude, it's amazing. For those who have never been and you want to know what Bandon looks like, turn that thing on.
Yeah, Golf Channel's got the coverage. Oh. I don't know if the final match will be on NBC or if it'll all be Golf Channel.
I don't know. But you just do that every like 10 Bandon. Seconds.
Yeah, yeah. And they're playing on Bandon Dunes, so that's the original first course that was built.
It's been incredible. So it's been on TV the last couple of days. They're moving on in their match play portion of it, and yesterday something happened that has got people hot and bothered. So this was coming down in one of the matches between Tyler Strafacci.
Oh, yeah.
Strafacci? Yes.
That's pretty close on that. Who is a Georgia Tech star. He was squaring off with Segundo Oliva Pinto. He's from Argentina. It was on the 18th hole of their match, okay? Round of 16 in the match plays. 18th hole. Pinto hits one into the sand trap into a greenside bunker, which he went in, kind of took a look at it, was trying to get a sense of, all right, how's it look? How do I need to hit it out of here? All that kind of stuff. Anyways, he walks kind of around. He's kind of taking a look at the green. Then he's starting to walk back towards the bunker. As he is doing that, his caddy stepped into the bunker, leaned down, and he brushed the sand several times with his hand just to get a sense of the substance of it.
Was it smooth or hard? Was it thick?
Okay. You know, it's just going to affect the way that you hit the ball out of the sand, obviously.
So
right?
He's not touching the ball. Just the
not
sand.
Touching the okay. ball. He's just, and there's video of it if you want to go pull it up. Yeah. It's all over Twitter.
This is one of the local caddies. He didn't bring his own caddy. So he's one of the caddy program down there at Bandon.
Is our guy Ross?
I forgot his name. They listed his name.
His name is in here. The caddy's name is Brant Brewer, and he's a local looper.
We didn't need to call him out by actual name.
He's in an ESPN headline article. Okay, he's out there. I don't think people are going to be affected by that. So he's a local caddy, and there's actually a thing going where, like, you have good history of winning down there if you use a local Bandon caddy. It's like one of those stereotype or whatever you want to use, right? So he puts his hand in the sand. That, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who don't know,
yes,
is against the rules. That is Rule 12.2B, which outlines the restrictions on touching the sand in a bunker and notes that a player can't deliberately touch the sand in the bunker with his hand, club, or rake, any other object in an effort to test the condition of the surface to attain information on the next stroke. Rule 10.3C, which I know you're up on, 10.3C.
That's my second favorite rule in the game of golf,
states that the player is also responsible for the caddy. So in essence, the caddy is an extension of the player. So the caddy touching the sand means that the player touched the sand.
That's ridiculous.
And at that point, it was the 18th hole. They were all square in match play. Game blouses.
I just tweeted out a little video thing, and you can see in there. I think it's the same on the green too. You can brush something away.
Like you could pick a leaf off, right?
Yeah. Or you can knock something away, but you can't get a feel for, like, you can't put your hand and kind of test the green to see if it's.
Oh, I didn't know that was a rule.
Yeah,
really?
You can't do that.
Because the guys will do it with their putter all the time to fix ball marks and that kind of stuff.
They can fix ball marks, but you can't put your hand to test to see how much moisture in there, how soft or firm it is.
I'm going
to
do that next time I play. I'm walk on my knees. So, yeah. Feel the line of my putt.
To figure out if it's dry or wet or compacted, you can't do that. But I didn't get, I thought the caddy was just like,
well, he should have known, first of all, right? Like, I bet you he felt terrible about it.
That's something, yes. They both felt terrible. That's something you should know, I think, at this point.
Why is that a rule? What does that do? Yeah, the sand's real firm. Okay, swing harder. The sand's real swing hard. Like,
now,
you're
let me
in
ask
a
you
sand
this.
Trap. What the hell is the problem
let
with
Let me ask
this?
You this, and I don't know if this is applicable or possible, but I had one of my buddies, Tommy, I woke up this morning and had like a 15-long text rant about this. This is stupid. This is what's wrong with golf.
And
he's
stupid.
A diehard golfer. He's just like, this is dumb, right?
Yeah.
Now, in match play, you can give up putts, right? Like, you can say that's good, or you don't have to finish. You can
putt,
concede,
yes.
Right? Could his opponent, I don't know the answer to this, could the opponent have conceded the penalty stroke?
I would hope.
And said, like,
could.
Dude, this is the 18th hole.
Yes.
Like, that's dumb. Go ahead, hit the ball.
Well, do you do it in an amateur championship?
I think you'd have to recognize it at the time.
Would you want to win that way? Like, you're tied on the 18th hole?
Dude, I'm a very...
I wouldn't want to win that way.
I don't have shenanigans go on when I play with people, right? We normally follow every single rule to a T. Like, I had a friend today. We played in a really wooded area at Oregon City Golf Club. And he hit into the trees. The ball landed within, like, 3 feet of a tree. But surrounding that tree is just rock-hard dirt. Maybe 3 inches to his left is a little bit of grass. He hit it off the dirt. But I said to him, I go, dude, just it's 3 inches. I don't give a bleep. Why are we hitting off of rock hard dirt? Is there any difference in hitting off the cart path? No. By the way, he hit the ground. No dirt got moved. It was so hard and firm that nothing shot out. It was rock solid. It basically was the cart path.
Yeah, I get.
I'm not a stickler.
Look, I get. You need to have rules. Like, you can't go in there and take practice shots in the sand.
I get that.
You see this kind of stuff, and you just think, like, man, that's a brutal way
to lose.
Like
there to be room for the rules official and the other player to go, what he was doing, it wasn't near the ball. It wasn't anything.
It wasn't improving the lie.
Yeah. He didn't get any information that was. He was just not paying attention at the moment and waiting for his player to figure out what he wanted to do.
This is semi-Dustin Johnson almost, to a certain extent. I mean, not the exact same thing, but in an area where patrons were standing, that he's not going to have any clue that it's a bunker touching his club to the ground and taking a stroke penalty.
I'm curious to see what Harold will have to say about this tomorrow morning, because I think he will be one that, I understand where you can't. Yeah, you can't pick up sand, feel how hard it is, feel if it's wet, and because that'll determine how far behind the ball you want, how hard you want to swing, those sorts of things. Is it? Because there's different kinds of bunker sands too.
Right.
But I didn't get a sense from the video that he was just. I mean, if he had been on the grass, he was just waiting for his guy, and his hand moved it.
You know,
there's got to be some ability for local rules officials to make judgments and to get together with the other opponent. And so that didn't have anything to do with what the player did.
Yeah. Side note on the rules, because it sounds like we kind of all agree to a certain degree on this. But
I think it's the caddy should have understood where he was. Like, if you're in the bunker, you need to be aware that you're in the bunker and be careful what you're doing.
The caddy should know that you can't touch the sand. That's a pretty big no-no in golf.
But it's a dumb rule, right?
No, the rule's not dumb.
Yeah.
The application of the rule in this particular matter was overly harsh, and there should be something that the rules official can recognize.
Right.
All right, well, we disagree on that. This rule is dumb. If you touch the sand with your hand and it's not near the ball, I don't really care.
I'm going to use this against you on the 18th hole if you ever flirt with beating me. I saw that finger!
I caught the end of the tape-delayed replay the other day. Remember, we were texting during the sports situation. I can't even remember what we were watching. But I caught the end of it. God, how do we not have any tournament?
There's no infrastructure there whatsoever.
That's the tough part.
There's
for fans and for people to stay.
Okay, but not banned. And how do we not have one?
The U.S. Amateur is perfect for it because you don't have huge galleries for it.
Well,
you don't
have demands to play.
Yeah, there's no. I don't even know if they're letting family in or not.
What was our last PGA event that we had?
We used to have the old Fred Meyer Challenge.
Yeah, the Fred Meyer Challenge.
Was that a legit tournament or just like some goof?
Pro-Am,
yeah.
Probably a big event like that was when the Women's U.S. Open was out at Pump In the last time Annika was there.
Yeah, that's a good point.
The Women's Tour, they've come here a lot.
Yeah, they have a tournament every year.
It's the PGA Tour that I'm kind of curious
about. If you had a PGA Tour, I mean, normally you're going to have on the Thursday and Friday, anywhere between 20 and 30,000 people in there, depending on how you can space them out. On a weekend's 40 to 50,000 per day.
Where are you staying at Bandon with 40,000 people?
Where are you staying with 5,000 people in Bandon?
Yeah, that's a tough part.
Build a hotel. Like,
you build it, they will
figure it out.
Come on. They're the ones riding it off.
The event I would love to see staged there is the Ryder Cup, and those crowds are smaller, but it's still going to be 10 to 15,000, and those are all people too going to spend big bucks, and they expect certain levels of accommodations and amenities and those sorts of things.
Views and shots.
It's tiny little old coastal lumber towns down there.
What's the two courses they're playing?
They play Bandon Trails as well. I think they use Bandon Trails. There's a stroke event, metal play to get to the 64, and then it's match play.
Dude, the format's nuts. There's like 300 plus players, and they play, I think, back-to-back days, if I'm not mistaken.
I can't remember if it's 36 or 54 holes, but yeah.
And then the top 64 after 54 holes move into a match play bracket.
It's all, so you play it's all week long. They started on Monday. Nuts, it was great.
It's a huge event.
So you're going tomorrow.
I'm going down tomorrow, yeah.
I'm assuming everything, the conditions, because you're playing. Aren't you playing Bandon Dunes?
No, I'm playing Pacific Dunes.
Oh.
Yeah, obviously cannot get on the courses you're playing on. And everything was booked up, obviously, so we're staying off the property.
Might be a dumb question. I'm assuming all the courses are dialed for this event to give you those kind of condition.
I think they're always dialed to that level. But those ones probably a little bit more so for a U.S. amateur.
Gotcha.
Gaffney texted in, one of our favorites, said, wait, there's rules to golf? Not at the Fan Golf Classic, there's not.
Not when you got the nice old reliable foot wedge.
Yeah, this one, I felt for the golfer. I felt for the caddy. It was kind of awkward because the caddy afterwards like tried to deny it, but it's a U.S. amateur. There's NBC golf cameras all over the place, and like you can clearly, if go pull up the Golf Channel, they tweeted it out.
We
last
just put
night
it out on
six.
The fan.
Okay,
we just put it on the fan account.
So yeah, you can see. I mean, he steps in there and rubs his hand around, and it's an awkward moment. I wish there were ways around that, especially in a match play. I wish the other guy could be like, dude, we're finishing this thing out. I'm not counting that, but rules are rules, and the golf's got a lot of random ones. Oh. But the U.S. amateurs abandoned this weekend.
Who hasn't put their hands in a sand trap? I mean, come on, that happens to every guy out there.
We all do it every
time.
Let
me just say, I'd rather your buddy Crawford be able to use a chudder.
It's a legal club.
A golf club I'd never heard of until I met him.
Illegal.
Versus, like, this rule is so stupid. This sand rule is dumb.
All right, let's get to something out of the NBA. This bubble basketball has got people wondering, should it always be this way? We'll get to that crunch time next on The Fam.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that, you know, we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness of Beaverton Aloha Division. All back up and running. Go check them out, crunch.com. Stop by one of their three locations. I was not at the Glorious House of Gains today.
No days
But you did
off.
Get a workout in.
No
I did.
Days off.
I was striping it on the range this morning. I felt
do you,
good.
Do you do the golf workout when you do the range?
No, I don't.
Dude,
I need to.
That is the game changer for me. I got an iWatch a while back as
Where's
a gift.
Where's the golf one? I got a rower. I got an indoor cycle. I got yoga.
Keep going. Go to
high
the more.
Intensity hiking.
Once you click more and you see it, once you click it once, it'll know you want that in your
Ooh,
rotation.
Okay. I need to add that to my list. You know what? I am really tired of my Fitbit telling me how lazy I am, or my iWatch.
Yeah.
Getting tired of those updates.
Well, I went to the range the other day for 40 minutes, and it burned like 350 calories.
Look at that, man.
You do a round of golf, you're burning well over 1,000.
It's
so
just bogus.
The golf workout on the iWatch is the game-changing move for you.
Okay, I need to add that to the list. Hey, something has gone really well in sports, and we've been wondering for quite some time, will there be anything that have any sports things that have staying power post-COVID? And now folks are wondering, not the bubble in the NBA, because again, hopefully we can get back to a normal life of in-arena basketball.
Well, that's not feasible either to put guys there for like 7 to 8 months.
Not necessarily. But the play-in situation, the fight for the 8 seed, being within a certain gap of the 8-9 and having a one-game play-in or two-game play-in, it captivated people. That game for Portland, the games earlier in the day with Phoenix needing a win, Memphis needing a win, people were pretty glued to the NBA, and it now has folks wondering, is this something that the NBA should make permanent?
I can understand the maybe the logic and the reasoning to do that. It's there's no doubt it last night and the last three nights it's been a playoff game, right? It's felt like a game seven. If they lost last night, we'd be talking about, oh, man, can you believe their season ended that way to the freaking Nets?
God, that would have been so depressing.
It would have, but they get in and you get the playoff situation. If you get back to having normal seasons, all right, we get past this COVID and it's back to 82 regular season games and they play in their own arenas and maybe fans are there or maybe it's half capacity. I don't know. But if we get to that point, I don't want to see this unless you specify they have to be within a game and a half. It is absolutely unfair to teams like Memphis who were playing pretty well, and then they take a couple months off, you go to a bubble, different environment, weird situations, and because you went into a cold streak, you also lost your second best player, you're in a predicament where now you're fighting to make the postseason, whereas I think in a normal year, I'm not convinced Portland makes it. As great as this story has been, and as fun as Damian Lillard has been to watch, I'm not convinced they're turning anything around, and I largely would put my eggs in the they finish below 10 games below 500 basket. Mm-hmm. It's fun. It's unique. And I'm glad that they came up with the idea now because it makes it so unique. But as a regular thing, I don't want a 4.5 game. Like, that separation's ridiculous. You play 82 games, you play it for a reason. You want to do a play-in? Great. But I think the 9 seed has to be within a game and a half. Anything else for me, and I just think you're kind of wasting 82 games.
Well, I think if you want to completely, and there's been more chatter about going to just the best 16 teams in all the league.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to do that and you want to expand it to the best 18, and then you take the bottom 4 to have a little play-in thing to get the final 8 seeds, I'd be more into that scenario. But if you're going to keep things separated by the conferences, then 82 games is plenty in a normal season to, you know, you get to play your opponent, you know, in theory, 3 or 4 times.
Right.
You had 82 whacks at it. If you're a game out, you're a game out. This was just such a unique thing. And the NBA is like, we got to create some sort of urgency for all the players to come and play these 8 games so we can take care of our TV contracts and have some interest. Because once Boston and, you know, the Lakers and Milwaukee kind of had their spot secured, man, they dialed it back. So if all the games were like that, yeah, it would be pretty bad.
Yeah, that's a valid point. I saw some folks on Twitter yesterday who aren't, you know, super into the NBA saying this is like, what? Memphis made it. They didn't play that good. Phoenix was 7-0. That's kind of dumb. It's like, well, the 65 games had to count for something. Like, you can't just nullify what Memphis accomplished all season.
You had a chance to not be that bad at the start of the bubble.
There was an actual regular season. I think we all forget before things shut down. So Memphis deserves it because of what they accomplished prior to the shutdown. And this wasn't all on them. Jackson goes down. That's a pretty big injury. And it's going to affect the way that they play. Yeah, I find it interesting to get games that normally you're not really caring about or following that you're really invested in. And I thought that was pretty cool for the league. I don't know if it comes down to an 8-9 matchup or if you go the All-16, something like that. I've always been an advocate for a playing tournament for the number one overall pick.
That would be cool.
Make the 8 crappiest teams in the league. Yep. So you got to go earn the number one pick this year. You can't just tank completely.
Well, you stop the obvious tank from going in motion because if you tank too hard, right? Like if you're the... let's say the New York Knicks. If you're the New York Knicks and you're tanking super hard to go get Wiseman or some other big stud coming out of college or high school, well, if you tank too hard, yeah, you got the most losses. But if they do a tournament for the one pick,
you can't win it.
You're probably going to get a really crappy pick. Is that unfair? I think from time to time there can be circumstances where that sucks, right? Like Golden State had everybody injured this year. They're probably going to get the number one pick, or if not, be right there. But largely I would be okay with it because I do think it would start to cut down and eliminate on the idea of all out. We are going to suck on purpose from day one till day 82 in this league and be rewarded with the number one overall pick. I like that approach. I do think there's other elements, and I know we're against it. There's a lot of elements from COVID sports I think we could all discuss. And I think that's almost a segment in itself. Is there an element of COVID sports that you would like to gain? Not just the NBA, baseball, hockey. Is there an element from COVID sports that you love? Because personally, big fan of having sports on in the middle of the day. I think it's great.
Absolutely. I love having it on all day. But yeah, it's got people wondering because it worked out great for the NBA. And that's an interesting theory we'll get to on the other sports of what can stick out of this COVID situation. Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness, Beaverton and Loa Division, all back up and running. Go check them out, crunch.com, or stop by one of their locations. Great deals in the month of August. Last to get to in the final hour, Sprague in the line. Get your fake sponsors in, 503-250-1080. We will start, though, with Anthony Newman, our good friend, former Oregon Duck, former NFL player. What does he make of the shutdown? How would he handle it as a coach? How would he handle it as a player? And his thoughts on the high school situation as a high school coach in the area. He kicks out the final hour next. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fam.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.